Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Today, what's to become of U.S. media after being decimated by some of the worst layoffs in decades?
A news outlet is only worth anything because of the content that's produced. If you decimate the product itself, the staffing, and etc., the product isn't the same.
I'm Malika Bilal, and this is The Take. The U.S. media industry has been in freefall for quite a few years, but a recent round of layoffs seems to be happening at an accelerated pace. A quick rundown of what's happened in the last few weeks alone has some in the industry calling it a bloodbath.
Recent data shows a nearly 50% increase in job losses among print, digital, and broadcast news organizations in 2023.
LA Times announcing massive layoffs today, cutting the jobs of at least 115 employees.
The sports website Deadspin has been sold and its entire staff cut in the process.
This is a major development today. The website BuzzFeed News is closing down.
Troubled multimedia firm Vice Media has announced that it will soon stop publishing on its website. The company will also lay off several hundred staffers as part of the fundamental changes to its strategic vision under its new owner.
So, how did we get here? And why is this happening now? I sat down with someone who's been reporting on this and who likens it to the 2008 devastating U.S. housing crisis.
I'm Andy Hirschfeld. I'm a journalist in New York. I'm a regular contributor to the business and economics section of Al Jazeera English online. And I used to be a business news anchor myself.
So you stay busy and you got your eye on several different media outlets, which makes you a really good person to talk to on this topic. So welcome to The Take. Today, we're talking about a reality that you and I are both living in as journalists in the U.S. It is bleak out there in our industry, and almost every day I open social media, I feel like I'm learning of new layoffs and staff cuts. How is it for you? How many people do you know who've gotten laid off in the last year?
At least a dozen, maybe two. It is shocking. People who I know who work in the industry, if we don't end up getting laid off, a lot of our conversations turn out to be, who do we know? Where is the latest round of layoffs? So where do we think is going to be the latest round of layoffs? And that's not the most fun conversation to have over and over and over. It's pretty indiscriminate at this point.
Yeah, most recently, I'm based in Los Angeles, and layoffs at the news organization, the LA Times, really hit deep. But there have been so many. So for people who aren't in our bubble, you know, you mentioned the conversations you're having with other journalists, and the same is happening on my end. How do you feel personally when you hear about a new round?
It is depressing. And one of the reasons why I freelance myself, one is, of course, the flexibility with my time, but also because there was a little bit of a reckoning for me that was like, why would I want to dedicate myself and my time to an organization that at the end of the day, as soon as I'm expendable or I'm no longer useful, this place that I've put all of my time and energy towards just cuts me loose with little to no notice. And I think that is a common sentiment, especially amongst across the industry, but definitely amongst freelancers, people that I've know who have chosen this career path.
Yeah, a risky but rewarding career path. So let's talk about one of the biggest cuts that we saw over these, you know, last several months. And that is the outlet Vice, which is known for its edgy news and features coverage. And it announced in February that it was ending its flagship online publication.
Vice Media was once one of the hottest names in new media. It's an extraordinary collapse.
It's a media company that has consistently won awards for its journalism. So tell me about what happened there.
Well, the other part of this is they consistently have a reputation in the journalism business for series after series after series of layoffs. In this particular case, it comes about a year or so after the company filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. In the process, Fortress Investment Group, which is a private equity firm, took a stake in the company to, in theory, lift it up.
Fortress bidding $225 million to take over Vice Media. I think the game plan here is to probably sell it for parts, since Vice is the parent company of some pretty notable brands.
In the process, they kind of gutted the news organization. They opted for the organization to leave their flagship office in Brooklyn, New York. Later, some additional staffing changes. And it is the story that is so common across this industry that once a private equity firm comes in, or an investment firm of some kind comes in, it's going to be a massive shift for that organization. And frankly, that's been the case over the last decade, as particularly private equity has taken a substantial role in the direction of the industry.
You've reported on this layoff, and I know that before filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy last year, Vice paid its executives about $11 million. And this is a company that was once valued at $5.7 billion. What was going on?
From what I understand, it was a lot of reckless spending on a variety of different topics. I've heard from people that they spent huge amounts of money on things like milk, which is crazy to me.
Milk for the employees? So are we talking about employee perks?
I don't know the specifics of that, but I know there's some strange choices in that respect. Mm-hmm. And making it I don't want to say an outlier in the business, because there are perks that seem bizarre, or spending that just seems out of the ordinary or peculiar. But when I heard that story, it kind of takes the cake a little bit.
Okay, so Vice was sold to this New York-based investment group, a private equity company, and we know that it's not alone. We're not picking on Vice here. It's just one of many companies that this has happened to. And it's been happening for a while, so it's not a new phenomenon. But we might not all understand exactly what is happening. So what is a private equity company, and what are they doing here in media?
A private equity company, what they do in media is they come in and they inject a certain amount of capital, buy equity in the company that more often than not have some reason why they're not performing as well as they should, whether it's audience traffic or something like that. If subscription revenue is down, for example, they come in and they try and change the structure and try and lift up the finances to help the organization get back on track. But in theory, and what happens in practice, are two very, very different things.
But these companies are buying up these outlets, so they must be worth something to them. What is it that is actually being bought up? Because apparently it's not the journalists themselves. What happens in practice?
I think the best way to describe it is like a tube of toothpaste. You have the bulk of what's in the tube are the physical liquid assets that come with any organization, and one of those is real estate. So a private equity firm will come in and say, hey, a great way to help bring in and make some money and lift things up would be to sell some of this real estate. And that's something we saw over and over and over. There are large newspaper conglomerates. One is called Gannett. And they own hundreds of newspapers across the country. And that means hundreds of newsrooms that are physical assets and they're real estate. So that's the bulk of what's in the two. And they take that out. Now, there's still something left there where they can cut costs consistently. And that's where these layoffs come in. So they squeeze that remaining bit out. Now, you still have, if you, you know, brush your teeth, obviously, you still have something left in the tube. And at this point, this is what the playbook of private equity does, is they just kind of squeeze out what they still can and try and make it work. It's the organization, it's its assets, and its influence. And when I say influence, I mean not necessarily driving what the coverage is, although that does happen. It's the influence of saying that you own something that's inherently not profitable. Journalism is a public service at the end of the day, which means it's not really intended to make money. And the influence there is like, it's kind of like owning a really fancy car that you can't actually drive on the street. It's to be able to show off that you can afford something that doesn't financially make a whole lot of sense. But there is money to be made, and there is value there. It's a risky investment, obviously. But if there wasn't any money to be made, these private equity firms wouldn't buy the companies.
So what kind of journalism does this leave U.S. audiences with? That's after the break.
Get your news in less than 3 minutes, three times per day with the Al Jazeera News Updates. Just ask your home device to play the news by Al Jazeera or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, Andy, you wrote a piece for AlJazeera.com, and it's entitled, Is the U.S. Media Layoffs Phenomenon the Next Housing Crisis? Which is really a provocative thing to think about. And in it, you write that, like in the housing market, financial institutions capitalized on someone else's misfortune to make money from it. Explain.
So in the 2008 financial crisis, the big banks really banked, for lack of better words, on somebody else's misfortune.
2008 was a tumultuous year for the economy. The housing market collapse created one financial crisis after another, and it often seemed as if the news could only get worse.
Its effects of the recession that followed on income, wealth, inequality, and our politics are still with us.
One of the parallels with what's going on in the media sector is that you have private equity firms injecting capital into an organization and trying to make money off of somebody else's misfortune in a lot of ways in a similar fashion.
Leaving massive holes in the actual journalism that affects readers, listeners, viewers.
Exactly. Exactly. And that hurts consumers in a lot of ways.
We begin with Donald Trump spending another religious holiday on social media.
Taylor Swift is officially a billionaire. The Shake It Off singer has joined the likes of fellow billionaire artists like Rihanna and Jay-Z.
The urgent story of a bear at the center of a global and viral debate, of course, over whether this inhabitant of a Chinese zoo is actually a bear or a human in a costume.
Stretched too thin, it leaves holes in coverage, and it means that there are topics that may not get enough coverage. And that is the unfortunate reality. Like if you run a sports blog, there are a lot of sports out there. You know, maybe you're giving one sport more attention than another. Or if it's a political website or a political paper and you have a presidential election coming up, but you also have Senate races, House races, you have mayoral races, you have school board. And so there's going to be some topics within those that fall through the cracks if you don't have enough people to write the stories, do the investigations, do the editing. If you don't have the people to do these things, things are going to get lost. Or you're going to stretch someone so thin that mistakes are going to happen. And this is a business where mistakes can be a big, big problem for a lot of reasons.
So for people who aren't in this industry, who aren't media professionals, how is this going to affect them?
Well, I mean, private equity, they have their influence in just about every industry you can think of. And layoffs are something that seems to happen a lot when a private equity firm gets involved. That's not to say that private equity is necessarily always a bad thing or the people that work for them are doing something bad. But in practice, that's what happens. And you're hurting people are the kind of the consequences of these decisions. So it's not a media story. It's a story through the lens of media about a bigger topic impacting the American and frankly global economy.
So then finally, Andy, looking back, would you do it all over again? Would you become a journalist? And for those who are out there listening to this, wanting to be in this industry, would you encourage them?
I would say, first of all, yes, I would do it again. The question that I think people need to ask themselves, and this is a piece of advice that I got when I started in the industry, was if you're 95% sure you want to be a journalist, don't be a journalist. It's something you have to be like 100% involved in and into if it's something you want to do with your life, because it's not easy and it's rarely, rarely lucrative. It's a labor of love. So if you're going to do it, be aware that that's what you're signing up for.
And that's The Take. To read Andy's full piece, head to aljazeera.com. We'll also pop a link in our show's description. This episode was produced by Farinisa Campana and Chloe K. Lee, with Siri El-Khalili, Ashish Malhotra, Amy Walters, Nagin Oliayi, Khalid Sultan, Miranda Lin, David Enders, Sonia Bagat, Zaina Bezer, and me, Malika Bilal. Our sound designer is Alex Roldan. Alexandra Locke is The Take's executive producer, and Nay Alvarez is Al Jazeera's head of audio. We'll be back tomorrow.